واللانة الدائمة الباقية على أعدائهم من الآن إلى قيام يوم الدين. أما بعد، فقد قال الله سبحانه وتعالى في كتابه الكريم: فإمساك بمعروف أو تصريح بإحسان. صلوات الله عليه وسلم. In tonight's Tuesday night Majlis, keeping in mind that you know our center is now open, no more restrictions, even masks are not mandatory, although you know it's a choice of people, it's recommended. And with that opening, we alhamdulillah see again with the summer season coming in, you know, marriage ceremonies are now starting in full swing in a way. And I thought maybe it is appropriate to re-emphasize the issue of optional conditions that we have in the Islamic marriage contract. As far as our Jamaat is concerned, you know, whenever people come to organize or book the whole the marriage ceremony, they get a package which also includes the Aqdnama or Nikahnama or the Islamic marriage contract, which has also a second page which talks about optional condition. I would like to talk about it because I still see there is a lot of, you know, either there is no awareness about it or, you know, people don't take that seriously, and I thought that maybe this would be the appropriate time to talk about it. Salawat upon Allah. When we talk about marriage contract, the word aqd, you know, nikah or aqd, we use these words, you know, interchangeably. Aqd means a contract. And like any other contract, the marriage contract also has three essential conditions. Number one is the proposal from the side of the bride. You know, when we recite the nikah, it is, we basically do the proposal on side of the bride. And the acceptance, the second condition is that the groom or the groom's wakil would accept that proposal. And then the third important condition, without that, a nikah would not be valid. And that is mahr. That is a very essential condition. Now, in Arabic, we use the word mahr or sadaq. The proper English translation of that would be consideration. Consideration that groom agrees to give to the bride at the time of marriage. Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala in Surah An-Nisa, ayat number 4, chapter 4, ayat 4, he says, وَآتُ النِّسَاءَ صَدُقَاتِهِنَّ نَحْلَةً. You know, give them the sadaqat. Here it's not sadaqa. You know, you're not giving sadaqa to your wife. This is actually nahlatan. This is a gift. And so the word mahr and sadaq are again in the same meaning. Even in the nikah ceremonies, if you didn't pay attention in your own ceremony, remember that when we say, you know, ankahtu muwakilati ala al-mahr al-ma'loom, the word mahr is used. Sometimes we say ala al-sadaq al-ma'loom instead of mahr. So these are in the same, meaning. Now, mahr is basically the right of the bride. It is for her or her guardian to specify it. You know, and the groom can either agree or negotiate to bring it down if it is a higher amount that he thinks is, you know, maybe beyond his ability, until that they come to an agreement. And so remember that when we talk about mahr, there is one more also misconception among especially non-Muslims. They think that mahr means, you know, the groom is buying the wife. No. It's not really, it's actually is a symbolic gesture of the man's love for the woman that he would like to marry. And you see that even the Western tradition, when we talk about proposal and acceptance, you know, the way the man, you know, goes down on the knees, and I'm not saying this is mustahab, huh? I'm just giving an example. Even in the Western system, you know, it is a way of expressing his, you know, love for that woman. And so mahar is something like that. Second important point about mahar is not necessarily a monetary or material item. It can be, or it could be something else. Doesn't have to be dollar and cents. It could be a service. You know, if a woman is marrying someone who is very good in a good qari of Quran, and she doesn't know how to read the Quran, she can say, my mahar is that you will teach me how to read the Quran. It's the easy way out, huh? For the qari or somebody who knows that. You know, she can even say, okay, my mahar is that for 1 year you will serve as a tea server in the Jamaat functions for 1 year. And if the groom agrees, that will be a valid condition. So it could be a service. It could be that, you know, you will pay for my higher education. So it's already there that, you know, the marriage cannot be a barrier as far as higher education is concerned. And now it's not the parents, for example, it is the husband who has to even pay for it. Or, for example, you know, the condition of Hajj. So it doesn't have to be dollar and cents, it could be anything. And this example of recitation of the Quran that I'm talking about is actually from the seerah of the Prophet, where a lady came and, you know, she wanted to get married, and Rasulullah asked the companions, who wants to marry her? A fellow stood up, he said, but I don't have any money. I can't give any mahar. So Rasulullah asked her, do you know how to read the Quran? She said, no. Do you know how to read the Quran? He said, yes. Your mahar is that you will teach her how to read the Quran. And she accepted it. And so it doesn't have to be dollar and cents, it can even be a service. Moreover, mahar can be immediate at the time of nikah, or it can be deferred upon demand whenever she wants. It can be partially immediate and partially deferred upon, you know, demand. And so there is a lot of flexibility in how, you know, the issue of payment of mahar is concerned. It is not connected with the issue of divorce. That's again a wrong concept that many people have. At the time of marriage, many times I get this question, Maulana, what is the mahar of Fatimi? What was the mahar of Fatima al-Zahra salawatullah alayha? It was 500 dirhams. Dirham means silver coins. In those days, each coin was actually 2.5 gram in weight. And so you basically have to look at 1.25 kilo of silver and its current value, and you will get that in the, you know, current equivalent of Mahr Fatima salawatullah alayha. And so proposal and acceptance and mahar, these are the three essential conditions for an Islamic marriage. Without that, the marriage would not be valid. Now we come to this issue. Optional conditions in aqd and marriage contract. Since marriage is a contract, there is a room to add optional conditions, provided both parties agree on it. So they need to have a discussion about it, think about it. Whatever is agreeable and acceptable can be included in that. Whatever is not doesn't go in it. Now, this might seem a new idea. People will say, this is an innovation, this is bid'ah, we never heard about it. My parents say they never heard about it. My grandparents say we never heard about it. Well, just because somebody didn't hear about it doesn't mean that it is not part of the Sharia, you know, concepts. This concept of the idea of adding optional condition in an aqd, whether it's business or marriage,
This has been there from day one. You look at Sheikh Tusi, who lived in the died in the year 460 after Hijra, the founder of the Hawza Ilmiya of Najaf. He's one of the earliest scholars after the era of when the Ghaybat started. You will see that Sheikh Tusi, in all his books, Al-Nihaya, Al-Khilaf, Al-Mabsut, talks about this issue. And you go through the books of all the jurists from Sheikh Tusi all the time till our own time, including Ayatollah Marhum Muhsin al-Hakim, Ayatollah Khomeini, Ayatollah Khoi, and others. They talk about this issue of, you know, optional condition that the couple can aid in their marriage if they want. Actually, even the Nikahnama, you know, the marriage contract devised in India and Pakistan, in Urdu and its English translation. If you look at it, you will see there is one column. After mahar, they say, you know, sa'ira shurut, other conditions. In most of the examples that I have seen, that other conditions, there is a line on it. We don't know more, they don't even discuss about it. So the concept of having, you know, additional conditions in marriage is there. Even in the Nikahnama and the marriage contract of India and Pakistan, you will see that. Of course, during our time, especially after the, Islamic revolution in Iran, this has become more popular. You know, in Iran, mashallah, they actually have a booklet, which is the marriage contract. And they have about 30 plus, you know, optional conditions, all printed out, with places to sign under each condition. Whatever condition the couple have agreed on and sign on it, it will be part of the nikah and, you know, marriage contract. Whatever is left blank, it's not. And so that is there. But I would say they go to the extreme by adding, you know, about 25 to 30 conditions. Why do we do this? And this is what I would like to just discuss. Why, you know, we talk about this issue? Well, I'll tell you, I almost now, it's 40 years living in Canada, looking at the communities, different communities, and dealing with marriage issues. And we see people like me, Muslim counselors and imams, and resident alims, they notice that sometimes some men, I'm using the word some, I don't feel bad about it. Sometimes and some men abuse the right of divorce given to them. Because when we talk about, you know, the talaq issue, the right is given to the husband and not to the wife. And sometimes when this right is abused, you know, we see situations where it becomes very, very difficult to resolve the problems. And I'll explain what I mean by that. You see, in order to prevent this kind of abuse, where the husband says, you know, I don't want to give talaq, means they are not even want to continue with amicable life, but no talaq either, as a way of punishing the wife, for example. Some men are like that. It's not that this potential is not there in the women. MashaAllah, they also have that good potential. You know, so the problem is a human problem. It's not a gender-based issue. You know, they have other ways of abuse. But I'm talking here because in the marriage, you know, and talaq issues, the husband has been given the right of talaq. And sometimes it is abused. In order to prevent that, you know, from mid-90s, I started proposing this idea of, coming up with some very serious issues, common problems that I have observed. And it is proposed that in the marriage contract, for them to study about it. And this gradually has been modified by some organizations in US, in UK, as well as East African Federation has also adapted that with their own circumstances and situations. And there, actually, it's mandatory. They wouldn't register a marriage without that. And so the bride and the groom, from the Sharia point of view, are allowed to put whatever condition they want in their marriage contract, except a condition which would go against the Sharia. That would not be allowed. And so the potential or the openness is there. What I have recommended are two things. One is the issue of the right of divorce in certain situations, about 4 or 5. And the issue of division of property at the time of divorce, how to handle that. Because many times we do not realize the couple who go to court to fight for the division of property, if it is not done properly according to the Islamic Sharia with willingness on both sides, the person who is getting more than his or her share are actually receiving it as a ghasb. A ghasb means a property which has been usurped, even though civil court has, you know, given that. And so you can actually download the marriage contract as well as the related discussion about it, why we do this, and what is the thought process behind it. You can look at the website, even the Jamaat office, as I said earlier, in the package they give to the parties who want to get married. You know, those related discussion papers are also a part of it. And it's something the couple have to read much, much before the marriage ceremony. I've seen situations where they want to agree on it at the time of nikah. Well, it doesn't work at that time. You know, because in a way the groom is faced with the conditions all of a sudden. He hasn't discussed, he has not studied it. So these are the issues which need to be discussed ahead of time, and then they can, you know, agree to include it or not to include it, or to cross some of them and accept some of them. Salawat on the Quran. One of the questions I get is, Maulana, why do you want to talk about marriage contract, about divorce in a marriage contract? Because they are opposites. Yes, they are opposites. Marriage is in a way sacred in Islam, but it is dissolvable. You know, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala says it is the last option, and I don't like it, but I have given the option to the people that if they cannot maintain amicable, loving relationship, then it's better for them to part. And so that issue is there. However, as I said earlier, the right has been given to the husband as far as divorce is concerned. And this is where the husband sometimes use this right. And in an abusive situation, especially when we are talking about physical abuse, the wife doesn't want to continue the relationship, but the husband says, I will not give you talaq. You go to the court, get the divorce, but that is a civil divorce. It's not a shari divorce. You know, I'll not give you the talaq, and she's stuck in the marriage. Whereas if you look at the Quran talks about this issue very clearly, 3 places. Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala says, either retain your wives in goodness or release them with kindness. There is no third option. Either you maintain that good relationship or you release them with kindness. Surah Talaq, Surah number 65, ayat 2. فَمْسِكُوهُنَّ بِمَعْرُوفٍ أَوْ فَارِقُهُنَّ بِمَعْرُوفٍ. You know, hold on to them. Retain them with fairness or kindness, or let them go with fairness. Even in parting, be fair.
Surah Baqarah, ayat number 231. فَمْسِكُهُنَّ بِمَعْرُوفَ أَوْ سَرِّحُهُنَّ بِمَعْرُوفَ. Either retain them in fairness or set them free with fairness. Surah Baqarah again, ayat 229. فَإِمْسَاكٌ بِمَعْرُوفَ أَوْ تَصْرِيحٌ بِإِحْسَانٍ. Either you retain them with fairness or let them go with kindness. So there are only two options. Either you have a good marriage or you have an amicable separation. There is nothing in between where the woman, according to the term of the Quran, is mu'allaqa. She's hanging there, neither married nor divorced. That situation is not acceptable. But we have seen situations, rare minority situations, but yes, we have seen. And this is where, this issue of adding these conditions for specific situations is an essential part of the solution to it. Even Imam Ja'far al-Sadiq alayhi salatu wasalam, he's talking about marriage but also divorce. He says, when a man intends to marry a woman, he should say, I pledge by the Ahad, covenant that Allah has taken to retain my wife in goodness or to release her with kindness. Because even Imam is talking about it, that when the marriage takes place, this should be your pledge, that either you will retain her with goodness or release her with kindness. But this is where we see sometimes, they decide to keep the woman hanging, suspended, mu'allaqa, neither married nor divorced. And, when this such situations happen, then what do we do? Number one, people like me or the Jamaat, committee, for example, which handles such issues, or other counselors, they will try to put family pressure on the husband. Your marriage is not working, just get over with it. Give the consent for talaq. If that doesn't work, the community pressure is used. But even if that doesn't work, then what happens? The last resort that we have is that such a case is then referred to the mujtahid. Can I request the brothers from there to move here? There is some empty space here. Don't worry, the malaika will find their own place. Don't ever leave an empty space for them. The last resort that we have in the Shia fiqh is that such a case is then forwarded to the marja, the mujtahid, and he or his wakil, who is authorized. Remember, not all wakala have that authority and that power. That if they are convinced that this is a situation of abuse and the husband is refusing the talaq because he wants to punish the wife, if that conviction is there, they are satisfied, then the marja or his authorized wakil, then they can use their judicial authority from the fiqh point of view and pronounce the judicial talaq, which is a talaq pronounced by the marja or his wakil, even if the husband does not agree to that, in order to, resolve that problem. However, that last resort also is not that simple. You have to basically write the case, and if you are satisfied, then you add your own support for it. Then it goes to the marja's office. It's a long process. It just like any other judicial process, even in Canadian courts, it takes a long time. And so this is where we basically talked about this issue, that if you have this optional conditions in the marriage contract for some serious cases, not just that, I'm just don't like it today, And so I want talaq and exercise that my right? No. And I'll give you the example that we have in number one. If the husband solemnizes a religious marriage with another woman without the permission of the first wife named in the marriage contract. In Canada, you know, you can't have more than one wife legally. In Islam, it is allowed. So if a husband goes, a Muslim, you know, husband goes and marries another wife, just in the Shari way, then what happens? This is where the issue is that, can you stop him? If Quran has given the right, you cannot go against that right. So what does this do? The condition here says that, you know, the husband hereby delegates irrevocable authority to the wife to appoint somebody as his representative in order to get herself divorced. So now the husband is delegating his power of divorce, you know, his authority of divorce to his wife under certain conditions. Number one, if he goes and marries a second wife, you cannot put a condition that he cannot marry a second wife because that will go against the Quran. But now you have this, you know, the husband would have a hanging sword there. If you go and get a second wife, Sharia has allowed you, it's not haram. But remember, at the end, you will still only have one. Because number one has a right to get out of the situation if she doesn't want it. And so remember this, I'm asked this question, oh, how can you put this condition there? Sharia has allowed me to marry four wives. Yes, you can do that. But your wife now has an option of either accepting it or getting out of it. Number two, if the husband ill-treats or physically abuses the wife. Now all these things, if there is dispute on this issue, it has to be taken to a third party, whether it's resident alim or the reconciliation committee. Once it's proven, then they will say to the wife, you have a right to exercise that authority which has been given to you in that marriage contract, especially if we are talking about physical abuse. Or if the husband abandons the wife and does not provide for her for more than 6 months continuously, he just goes away. You know, 6 months. Nobody knows about him, he's not in communication, he's not even providing. Then what happens? The wife has an option if she wants to still, you know, wait for 6 years, it's her right. But then here she will have an option of getting out of this situation where the husband has just, in a way, disappeared. Number three, if the husband divorces his wife in the civil court but refuses to give her the religious divorce. So this is done for harassment. That, okay, I'll give you a divorce in the court but not in the Sharia form. Or the final one that we have added here in the delegation of power from the husband to the wife is that if the wife obtains a civil divorce, but the husband refuses to give her a religious divorce. Because we are looking at a situation that if the wife has gone all the way to a civil court to get the divorce, it means it is not a marriage which is going to survive or work anymore. So hanging on to it doesn't really make sense anyway. And so these are basically the issues that we have discussed there. And I would like to emphasize that these are only some important issues that, you know, people like me have observed in dealing with marital problems in the community. As I mentioned, the Iranian, you know, Ahdnama is a booklet. It has long, long conditions there, you know. They even talk about if somebody is put in prison for a crime which is going to be a disgrace for my family and our name, then I have a right to, you know, divorce him. And many, many other things like that. So but we have only selected. We didn't want things to be that easy. You know, we just would like people to work on their marriage. But these issues where especially physical abuse, abandonment is concerned, or giving divorce in the court but not the Shari'i divorce, this is actually the sign of, you know, just a way of punishing the wife. And this is where we have to take this step in order to facilitate the issues in a more easy way. Salawat on the Quran. The issue of division of property, inshallah, we'll talk about it. It's a longer discussion. I can't cover that in one majlis, but I'll just say one thing, just to balance on the other side, that sometimes we've seen cases that the woman would like to have the right in Islamic Sharia, and then they will also go to the civil court and the Canadian way, so they have benefit from both sides. You realize the civil court might give you certain things as far as monetary issues and property issues are concerned, but from the Shari'i point of view, if there is no proper agreement between the two, then that will be considered to be ghasb. And ghasb means this is usurpation. If it's, let's say, a house, then it becomes a ghasbi property. You cannot even do namaz in there. You know, we have this simple masail. When you do wuzu, you are told, make sure the water is mubah. The place where you're doing is wuzu is mubah. The cloth is mubah. What is mubah? Mubah is opposite of ghasb. Means something which is legally yours from the Shari'i point of view, or you have a right to use it. And if it's not that, then it becomes ghasbi. Even your wuzu and namaz will become batil. And so these are serious issues where we have to, you know, educate the community more about it, so that we do not get into problems as far as our akhirah is concerned. Salawat upon the Quran. آج کی اس مجلس میں میرج کانٹریکٹ کے بارے میں کچھ باتیں آپ کے سامنے ہم نے پیش کی ہے. ہمارے لیے شادی میں رول ماڈلز اور ایگزامپلز کی کمی نہیں ہے. رسول اسلام اور جناب خدیجہ کی مثال کو آپ دیکھ لیں. صلوات پڑھنے ایک بار بلکہ آپ اس سے پہلے جائیے سورہ تحریم میں. سورہ تحریم وہ سورہ ہے جہاں خداوند عالم نے میرج کے چیلنجز کا ذکر کیا ہے انبیاء کی زندگی میں, اسٹارٹنگ ود ایگزامپل آف اور اون پروفٹ, جہاں ان کو چیلنجز تھے دو خواتین سے. ڈیٹیلز آپ پڑھ سکتے ہیں تفسیروں میں, لیکن وہاں پر رسول اسلام نے بہت ہی صبر سے کام لیا ہے, پیشنس سے کام لیا ہے. اینڈ دیٹ از دی ایگزامپل دیٹ وی ہیو ٹو فالو دیئر. پازیٹیو سائڈ میں اگر آپ دیکھیں تو خود رسول اسلام کی زندگی جناب خدیجہ کے ساتھ, یو نو, بہت سے سچویشنز آتی ہیں جہاں ایکسپیکٹیشنز جو ہیں بہت ہی زیادہ ہوتے ہیں مالی لحاظ سے, مٹیریلسٹک ایکسپیکٹیشن اسپیشلی سم وومن ہیو آف دیئر ہسبینڈس. آپ دعا کریں, ایک دوسرے کو ہیلپ کریں, مشکل حالات میں ایک دوسرے کا ساتھ دیں, تو خداوند عالم یقیناً جو ہے برکت نازل کرے گا. مشکل یہ وجہ ہے نا کہ ہم ادھر دیکھتے ہیں ادھر دیکھتے ہیں, وہ ہمارا نیبر کا لون جو ہے زیادہ گرین ہے. ارے بھائی وہاں جا کے دیکھو, شاید نظر جو ہے اس میں ریفلیکشن کچھ اور ہوگا. اپنے کو دیکھو, اپنی چادر کو دیکھو, شوہر کے چادر کو دیکھو, اور دعا کرو, ایک دوسرے کو ہیلپ کرو. جناب خدیجہ صاحب دولت و ثروت تھی. رسول اللہ کی شادی شدہ زندگی شروع میں کئی سال تک الحمدللہ بہت ہی آرام دہ تھی, لیکن اسلام شروع ہوا, چیلنجز شروع ہوئے, مخالفتیں شروع ہوئیں, سب کچھ جو ہے آہستہ آہستہ کم ہوتا چلا گیا. جناب خدیجہ نے قربانی دی ہے مالی اعتبار سے بھی, رسول اسلام کہتے ہیں کہ اسلام قائم نہیں ہوا ہے مگر خدیجہ کی دولت اور علی کے تلوار سے. لیکن یہ نہیں تھا کہ جب رسول اللہ علیہ السلام اور ان کا پورا خاندان جو ہے بنو ہاشم کو بوائیکاٹ کر دیا گیا, سینکشنز ان پر لاگو کر دیے گئے, تو جناب خدیجہ نے یہ نہیں کہا کہ اوکے ناؤ یو آر پور, یو میڈ می پور, آئی ایم لیونگ. زندگی یہی ہوتی ہے, کبھی خدا دیتا ہے کبھی لے لیتا ہے. جناب امیر المومنین کی مثال کو دیکھیں, جناب سیدہ کو دیکھیں آپ. آخر وقت تک سیدہ نے جن حالات میں ساتھ دیا امیر المومنین کا, ابتدائی دور مالی اعتبار سے اتنے آسان نہیں تھے, لیکن آخر میں بھی فاطمہ نے اپنی جان دی ہے علی کی ولایت کے لیے جس طرح سے قربانی کی ہے. اور یہ مثالیں ہمارے لیے کافی ہیں. وی ڈونٹ ہیو ٹو گو ہیئر اینڈ دیئر, دوسروں کو دیکھنے کی ضرورت نہیں ہے کمیونٹی میں, اپنے کو دیکھیں, کوشش کریں, ایک دوسرے کی مدد کریں. اور اس سلسلے میں آخری مثال جو ہم پیش کرنا چاہ رہے ہیں جناب امام حسین علیہ السلام رباب کی ہے. جناب رباب کے ساتھ بہرحال تمام اور بیویاں بھی تھیں امام حسین علیہ السلام کی, لیکن ایک خاص لگاؤ تھا امام حسین علیہ السلام کا جناب رباب کے ساتھ. جبکہ مورخین جو ہیں دو اشعار کوٹ کرتے ہیں منسوب ہیں امام حسین علیہ السلام کی طرف, اگر ان کے ہیں بھی نہیں تو سینٹیمنٹس حسین کے یہی تھے, جس میں یہ کہا جاتا ہے کہ امام حسین علیہ السلام نے کہا ہے کہ لعمرک اننی لأحب دارا تکون بها سکین والرباب, کہ میری جان کی قسم مجھے وہ گھر پسند ہے کہ جس میں سکینہ اور رباب ہوں. یعنی وہ بچی بھی سکون کے باعث ہیں اور جناب رباب بھی سکون کا باعث ہیں. احبہما وعبد جل مال جل مالی, ہم ان سے محبت کرتے ہیں اور اپنی پوری دولت قربان کرنے کے لیے تیار ہیں. وليس لعاتب عندي عتاب, ان کے لیے اگر اپنی دولت پوری ہم قربان کریں تو کسی اعتراض کرنے والے کا کوئی حق نہیں ہوتا ہے کہ وہ اعتراض کرے. اور اس میں اگر آپ دیکھیں تو جناب رباب کی جو قربانی رہی ہے, کربلا کے خواتین میں بہت ہی منفرد یونیک سچویشن تھی ان کی. عاشور کے دن آپ دیکھتے ہیں 6 مہینے کا بچہ ہے. حسین جب آئے ہیں انہوں نے کہا ہے کہ اصغر کو میرے حوالے کر دو تاکہ ہم پانی کے انتظام کر سکیں, کوئی سبیل نکالیں. اس وقت یہ ماں کتنی امیدوں کے ساتھ اس بچے کو لے کے گئی تھی, انہوں نے سوچا بھی نہیں تھا. دیکھیے جناب زینب ہیں, جناب ام فروہ ہیں, دوسری خواتین ہیں, اصحاب میں بھی جو خواتین آئی تھیں جن کے بچے اس قابل تھے کہ وہ چل سکیں, تلوار کو اپنے ہاتھ میں اٹھا سکیں, سب نے اپنے دل کو تیار کیا تھا عاشور کے دن کے لیے, اس لیے کہ شب عاشور میں یقین ہو گیا تھا جنگ ہو کے رہے گی. لیکن رباب نے سوچا نہیں تھا کہ یہ شش ماہ بھی قتل کر دیا جائے. عاشور کے دن بیٹا بھی قربان ہو گیا, شوہر بھی شہید ہو گئے, بس ایک یاد تھی شوہر کی سکینہ کی شکل میں. لیکن رباب دیکھتی ہیں کہ شام میں زندان شام میں بھی وہ دفن ہو جاتی ہے. حسین کی جو یاد تھی وہ ختم. اور اسی لیے آپ دیکھیں کہ یہ قافلہ جس روایت کے لحاظ سے جب واپس پہنچا ہے کربلا مدینہ جاتے ہوئے, اور جب یہ قافلہ تیار ہوا ہے اب مدینہ کی طرف جانے کے لیے, مجھے نہیں معلوم ہے, یقیناً تمام اہل حرم تیار رہی ہوں گی کہ وطن جانا ہے, لیکن مجھے نہیں معلوم ہے کہ رباب حسین کے قبر سے کس طرح سے اٹھی ہوں گی, اس لیے کہ وہ مدینہ جائیں تو کس کے لیے جائیں,
شوہر یہاں دفن ہے، بیٹا یہاں دفن ہے، بیٹی جو ہے شام کے زندان میں دفن ہو چکی ہے، 2 سال صرف رہی ہیں مدینہ میں کربلا کے واقعات کے بعد رباب زندہ، لیکن روزانہ دن کے وقت صحن میں آ کے بیٹھتی تھی، بیویاں کہتی تھی اے بیوی یہ تپش جو ہے سورج کی آپ کو اذیت دے گی، اس وقت ہمیشہ کہتی تھی ہم سائے میں کس طرح سے بیٹھ سکتے ہیں جبکہ میرے مولا جو ہے ان کا لاشا بے گور و کفن دست کربلا میں 3 دن تک پڑا رہا۔ اللعنة الله على القوم الظالمين سيعلم الذين ظلموا أي منقلب ينقلبون۔ خدا وند اس قلعے بعد قبول فرما، ہمارے گناہوں کو بخش دے، ہماری توفیقات میں اضافہ فرما۔ خدا وندہ ہم لوگوں کو صلاحیت دے صحیح معنوں میں اسلامی ویلیوز کو ہم سمجھ سکیں اور اس پر عمل کر سکیں، خصوصاً اپنے حقوق الناس اور فیملی کے روابط میں ایک دوسرے کا خیال رکھیں۔ خداوندہ جو بھی پریشان ہیں ان سلسلے میں، خداوندہ ان کے دلوں میں نرمی پیدا کر تاکہ اپنی زندگی کو وہ بہتر سے بہتر بنا سکیں، محمد آل محمد کے راستے پر وہ قائم رہیں۔ خداوندہ عالم اسلام میں امن و امان کی فضا پیدا کر، شیعوں کو اپنے حفظ امان میں رکھ، امام کے ظہور میں تعجل فرما۔ ربنا تقبل منا انک انت السمیع العلیم۔